that to 9,342,495, and that would be in the profile sheet. So keep your notes on the profile sheet. And what probably the best thing to do is just each time that you hit an item, we'll pause for a minute just to make sure that we have the numbers right so that we're all on the same page. And then I wanted to be, since we're looking at this spreadsheet, let's just make sure we understand what this is for a moment. And maybe your staff can help us tell us what the spreadsheets were offered for.
Mr. Chairman, we will do that. What my idea behind the spreadsheet was this, is that in the discussions that I thought we would have today, I was going to be referring to that, and I didn't want to frustrate the committee by looking at something and you all wondering what it is I'm looking at. So it was meant to be as a helpful, so we're all on the same page and looking at the same line. I'd invite Shelley if she has anything else to say about that.
Chairman Nicholas and members of the committee, I believe that the governor was working through some introductory remarks and some highlights of his budget recommendations, and then our intent was to go ahead and go through this worksheet one at a time to show you what the changes were in comparison to the recommendations that Governor Friedenthal had made. If that's acceptable, I think that was the process we had intended.
Drilling process, or whatever we're going to call it.
I'm okay with everything except that last process, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday in my remarks, I talked about the school construction. As you know, Governor Friedenthal recommended $61.9 million in supplemental budget for construction of school facilities. This is, of course, on top of the $1.2 billion appropriated for school construction between 2003 and 2010. And on top of the $156 million approved during last year's budget session. My thought on the $61 million is that before we agree to that, that we need some work regarding the preference law and regarding contractor law generally in Wyoming. I had occasion to speak to Senator Bebout this morning. He assures me that good work is being done on that. So what I would tell you is that I am interested in seeing what improvements we can make on that before we continue to spend that kind of money. As I've talked to others in the legislature, it seems like we have a pretty good opportunity during this session to make necessary improvements regarding how we're spending that money so that we can make sure that Wyoming, the citizens, the students, the schools, Wyoming businesses are getting the best bang for the buck when we spend those large amounts of money. So I will pause there. I think that, of course, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, are also in the spreadsheet.
The issue there, I'll just ask you, when you do, have you actually eliminated the $61.9 million, or have you put it, said, let's see what happens. You've got you're somewhere halfway in between, I think.
Well, we are. I mean, we are in between. As you'll see on the spreadsheet, that has, as a bottom line, has been taken off. One more page here. That has been taken off. As some of us have discussed before, I would like to see where we can go on the contractor law and the preference law before that is put back in. So as my spreadsheet is reflects that it has been taken off, Mr. Chairman. The Governor Friedenthal proposed funding for mega data centers. As you know from my discussion yesterday and from probably other comments, I am very hopeful that Wyoming can make some good moves regarding mega data centers. We have a good climate for that. We have some natural advantages in this state that are not seen in other states. And I think that by building some of these mega data centers, that we'll not only get the benefit of having the mega data center, but I do really believe that they're going to be magnets for other types of businesses, partly because of the people that they'll need, partly because of the equipment they can will need. In talking to some of these companies that are interested in moving to Wyoming, you know, they pay very good salaries, and they believe that with the right infrastructure in Wyoming, that they can build a facility here that could be maybe unmatched anywhere else in the country. And I think once we get one, I think there's opportunities to get more. So I've asked for that $14.5 million to help along with that process. Now, there is discussion about where does the $14.5 go. My thought currently is that that would go to the governor's office to, so that we could work within in cooperation with the Wyoming Business Council to see if this can be done, because some of these are sort of front burners, if it could be done in the needed fashion in terms of time. Also, I will tell you that I am trying to personally do my job of recruiting these companies and other companies as we need to. And with respect to the mega data centers, it's nice to have some, in addition to me just asking, to have be able to have a discussion about that amount of money if it turns out to be available and if it turns out to be $14.5 million. The next issue is funding for local governments and highways. My staff told me that I had talked about this not once, but more than many times yesterday. And here's my thought on it in summary, is that I am looking for a way that we can provide what I think is necessary funding to local governments. On top of that, I'm looking for a way that it is more than just a short or one-time dollar amount. Now, one of the reasons that I'm interested in that is that I believe that local governments, when they are faced with just when they have one-time funds, long-term planning is not used as well as it would be if they know that the money is going to be coming in over a period of time. And the result of that is if you can't do long-range planning, I think ultimately you're not as cost-effective when you do the projects. The same is true with highways. I think that when you look at highways and you see that deferred maintenance ultimately costs more, that is, if you don't spend the dollar today, you're going to be spending more dollars down the road, that we need to address our highways. And, of course, one-third of that would go back into the LSRA. So the result is, as it is proposed, is roughly, with the current anticipated dollars, is about $100 million into local government, about $50 million into local government, about $50 million into highways, and about $50 million into savings. Now, there is, of course, as we all know, there is great disagreement with some of you on this issue. And as I said yesterday, I think this is important for our local governments. I think it's important for our highways. If there's disagreement, I would ask for an alternative on how we can not just provide money this year, but provide a predictable funding stream that would be conducive to long-range planning by local governments and by the Department of Transportation. The one perhaps difference that I would like to point out is that in thinking about that, if we went down that road, my belief is that for the local governments, rather than the 50-50 split that was recommended by Governor Friedenthal, that is 50 for operations and 50 for projects, I think the better split percentage-wise would be 75% for projects, 25% for operations. The reason I feel that split is appropriate is I would not want, if that money did become available, I would not want that 50, that most of that to be going to hiring new employees, and then when the money ran out, with those towns would be left in a position where they have to lay off a lot of people. So my goal is infrastructure, and I think this is a good time with regard to our local governments and with regard to our highways to be working on infrastructure projects. It is my belief that a lot of projects that can be looked at today can be done more cheaply than they could even a couple years ago, and this is the time to be looking at it. The cost of labor and the cost of materials has gone down, although it's come back up a little bit. An example I would use is in Johnson County, where they had planned for some years to build a new jail. They began that process last year, and because they are building last year versus 2 years before that, they are thinking that the cost of the jail is going to be about 30% less than it would be if they would build it during the boom time. I would also add to that, I firmly believe that it's appropriate, and this body has done a good job saving money so when we have those rainy days, we have some ability to keep our government, state government, going. So some of that money, that one-third, goes back into it. The point is that, you know, the money is going to be going somewhere. And whether or not it goes, you know, if you put all of that into savings, we need to recognize that while the Treasurer's Office has done a good job for years, we do live in a time when the markets are volatile. We've seen unrealized losses. We've seen some actual losses. And we know what a mile of road is worth. We know what a new bridge is worth. And the market may go up or the market may go down. But there is some stability in having it in a road or a bridge versus having all of it in a market during these tumultuous times. Now, Mr. Chairman, I will be, as you set out your preference on how this is to go, I just have a few more general comments, and then I would like to go through the spreadsheet, if that's okay. Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, the bottom line is my recommendations for the supplemental budget. I cut $22.7 million in general fund expenditures. I cut $61.9 million in school CapCon construction. And with this week's CREG revenue forecast, there's about $52 million in general fund and $332 million in the school capital construction program available to you. Now, saying that, I recognize, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, that all of this money is available to you. I'm just trying to express a difference between what Governor Friedenthal recommended and what my recommendations are. So that is the difference between, I think, what you received from the last information you got from Governor Friedenthal and my recommendations. Now, if we may go through the spreadsheet. I'm starting on page one. I'm looking under the column Governor Mead General Fund Changes. The first item there is the $12.3 million. This amount of money was requested for UW and community college salary increases. Now, I think it's very fair that the community colleges and the University of Wyoming have a similar system to what we do for our state employees. My concern about funding this amount at this time is I have not seen any information that gives me confidence that we have the data needed to have valid comparables, that is, between what our community colleges in Wyoming are getting in terms of salaries versus other community colleges in the region and within the country. The same holds true for the University of Wyoming. I have just not seen the data in terms of where we are. Are we in the ballpark? Are we low? Are we high? And at least for me, until I see those numbers, I was not comfortable funding the $12.3 million. Item number two under Governor Mead's changes is the $437,576,000. This amount of money was recommended by Governor Friedenthal for maintenance on the Rockwell building in Sheridan, Wyoming. We looked at that Rockwell building in terms of how much of it's actually being leased, and it looked like to me, and we can go into this more, it looked like to me that the better thing to do would be continue to maintain it for now, but ultimately put it up for sale.
Is this the new building we acquired, or is this an older one? This is the brand new one?
Item number three I touched on in my narrative. That is the money for getting those employees up to 90% and also for their performance awards.
Line?
Yes, sir. That's, yeah, line 3501. I'm turning to page two.
Make sure I'm with you. On the profile changes, you've got the minus $12,389,252 above. And now we've got a reduction of $10 million off the 22. Is that the line we were just talking about?
It's line 3501. That includes the $2.7 million for increased insurance premiums.
Increased insurance, and then the reduction of 10. Let's tie in for a moment. You've taken off all the community college salaries came off.
Yeah.
And then the state employees, you have the insurance in, and you have 9.2 above that. So that would come about 11.8. It's actually 12, so the numbers. But are those the three components? We have insurance. We have bonus dollars of 3.1 approximately, and salary adjustments for about 6.1. Are those the three components?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and that all comes to the $12 million balance. Thank you. Go ahead.
I am turning to page two of the spreadsheet. This is at the bottom of the spreadsheet under the DEQ.
Debt, the 1.5.
The 1.5 million there. Now, this is my recommendation here to this committee. We have some backlogs within DEQ. During the transition process, we worked closely with DEQ to discover the amount of the backlogs. And, of course, some of the backlogs are not due to any fault of DEQ. Some of them are due to either the company itself or because of other matters with the federal government. What we wanted to do is we wanted to have them identify those backlogs within DEQ that they thought they themselves needed to address. And in doing that, they gave us a rough number, understanding was a rough number. And then we asked, what would we need to do to clean it up? Their initial thought was, here's what we need in order to clean it up in 5 years. I think 5 years is too long, because 5 years, you can miss a lot of opportunities. Who knows what new laws, rules, and regulations may be coming down from the federal government. So I am interested in doing it in a shorter time period. Now, I understand that we can say to each state agency, you know, listen, you shouldn't have had a backlog in the first place. This is your fault. Deal with it. And I appreciate that. But I also appreciate that we don't want to punish Wyoming companies, and we don't want to miss opportunities for the state of Wyoming by having a backlog that may always be there or only be cleaned up in 5 years. So I want to see what we can do to address it. And what I am recommending is that four FTEs be transferred from other agencies. I'm also recommending this $1.5 million to provide an opportunity for DEQ to hire outside contractors to see if, in fact, we can get this backlog cleaned up within 1 year's period of time. Now, before that money is expended, what I would ask of DEQ is a couple of things. Number one is they present to me a plan of how they're going to get this done if we did give them the money to do to hire outside contractors. And two, regular reports on how they're doing regarding the backlog. So that is the genesis of the $1.5 million. That was not
$1.5 million. Have you contemplated whether that's a one-time or an ongoing dollars? Or
My contemplation is it would be one-time.
Those would be one-time dollars for 1.5 to be have some oversight control by the governor's office on how they're spent. On the four FTE transfers, are those transfers that are already in the governor's budget, or those new proposals?
Well,
I think he has some transfers already.
He recommended those. They are not new positions. They are the same recommendation that Governor Friedenthal is in the transfer. They're not on top of the four.
Yeah, we'll get to those transfers, whether they come out of the block of vacancies or they're brand new ones. We'll get to that later. But those are existing. That's an existing rec with respect to the four transfers.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thanks. Facilities ones, Governor, on the 61, you've already talked about that, so you can.
Okay. I'm turning to page four. It's page five on your document.
Let me just take 1 second. I'm going to number my pages here. Everybody number their pages.
Is it four?
It's the Y dot, yes. Page 4, Y dot agency 45, and you've got a 1949.
Yes. And if we're there, it's the 1.9 is for air service enhancement. And it's what we are recommending is to fully fund the agency's request. Now, with regard to this, as you may know, I feel that improved air enhancement is critical for Wyoming's future, not only in terms of the enjoyment of our state, but equally important in terms of economic development. A plan was put in place on how we can provide funding to our air service to see whether or not it can improve and ultimately be sustainable. We obviously are not there yet. And I think that the hope is that by fully funding this, we will give it additional opportunity and a little additional time to see whether or not that can come about.
Take it. You must have dinner with Senator Cole.
Does he like this stuff? Yeah. I didn't have dinner.
We're starting to see some of that Jackson Hole background in you too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make certain that you'll spend a little more time on this issue.
Well, we're going to come back to everything.
Okay.
Here's what we're going to do. We'll go through this, and then we'll go back category by category. Okay. So we're going to get our questions. I suppose that person up at Sheridan will be help. You've got a friendly person here to really help you out. So you just You'll know when the softballs come.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I was assured there'd be nothing but softballs. The Livestock Board, I think the main difference here is we have recommended the $361,185 to improve computer equipment for the Livestock Board. My thought on this is I understand there's been some struggles with the Livestock Board, but my belief is because of the importance of ag to Wyoming, it's important that the records of the Livestock Board be updated, they put in a digital format, that those records are more easily available, not just for the benefit of the producers, but in case there is some issue with regard to health, with regard to brucellosis, whatever it may be, the more those records are computerized, the better. I'm sure we'll get back to that as well. The next item. University of Wyoming. Governor Friedenthal recommended $3.6 million for the Greater Western Library Alliance membership. My recommendation, I should say, is reducing that by half. This amount would be biannualized. I would point out that with the 1.8, that funding level would be still at a higher level than it ever has been. Now, the next item is you'll see the $3.5 million there. Now, this is the proposal to spend $50 million for the STEM. And my concern is that, one is, as has been said by Governor Friedenthal, and I think it is accurate, you know, the $50 million is not a precise number. But however precise it is, I thought some money should be set aside for ongoing operations of that building once it's built. And so we have taken the 3.5 out of the 50 and set it aside for operations. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
I have as corrections the 1.2.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Next item is corrections. The 1.2, this is regarding the women's prison in Lusk. The agency requested a little over $40,000 for design. Governor Friedenthal recommended on top of that $40,000, $1.2 million to go ahead and begin the building project. In my mind, I thought we should wait and see what the design brings before we fund the 1.2. That is for a parent-child program at the facility in Lusk. And as in summary, at the bottom there, you'll see that we've got $52 million plus with my changes, and with regard to the school monies, the remaining amount is $331 million.
With respect to your numbers, did you include the new Craig estimates to come up with your balances, or are those based upon the existing Craig?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, we included the $22.7 million in general fund, but we have not included the additional $41.7 million. There was an additional $41.7 million as well, but the 22 is.
I have to remind the governor that any monies that come in after the October Craig to the January Craig belong to us entirely. If there are reductions, they come out of your budget.
It's we're getting quite a list of rules from you, and we'll add that to it. Thank you.
Respect to the on the Craig, I know we talked about the with that in mind. You know, some of the committee were here when we had a Craig update, but Bill, I think what we'll want to do is, before we go in the Department of Health, we'll go over the new green, the new sheets, and we don't need to interrupt the governor's presentation for that. So we'll go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to interrupt the governor's presentation, but just one thing I'd encourage the committee to wait before really considering the school foundation program account profiles on this new profile, because there's some numbers in there that weren't taken into account. So wait until we go over the goldenrod really to consider that too much.
Well, as a practical matter, we're going to everything when we start going to markup, we'll start with the new numbers. We'll get everybody up to speed. The issue here we want to talk about really is the philosophy, the policy issues, whether you, and that sort of thing. We'll get through there. Governor, did that include all the principal changes and the presentation, the prepared comments?
Mr. Chairman, I do believe that I have covered them. That, of course, doesn't cover everything. It covers what I thought were the changes from when you last heard from the governor's office and Governor Friedenthal. Oh. Can you give me just a moment, please? Oh. So I missed the yes, Mr. Chairman. A few follow-up, if I may. The as you know, I have made a recommendation to appoint Tom Forsland to head up the Department of Health, and as you also know, the Department of Health has been facing some challenges in terms of money. I think there's a $21 million that we need to figure out what to do with. There's $25 million that has previously been set aside in the auditor's office to make available in the case of changing circumstances for the Department of Health, namely increased Medicaid costs. Governor Friedenthal recommended an additional $25 million in that reserve fund. I agree with that recommendation. Now, having said that, of course, it is my hope that Mr. Forsland does a better job forecasting, and we need to do a better job forecasting with regard to the Department of Health. My belief is that with the changing rules regarding Medicaid with the Affordable Care Act, that things can be in a state of flux for a period of time. I am not asking that the $25 million be put on top of the $25 million that's already there, because I lack confidence in Mr. Forsland. It is just a sort of a belt and suspenders approach to make sure that if we do run into a situation that we have that money available.
Governor, the committee folks have asked for a break. Now, here's the deal. We are all going back in at 10. It wasn't my intention. We can bring the governor back for the – if we bring you back during the lunchtime, is that – during our lunchtime, does that work? Pardon? Well, I don't mind taking a break. Let's – when do you need to be gone by?
Mr. Chairman, I agreed to meet some veterans down in the rotunda. They understood that I could go after I was excused by this committee, so they understand it's going to be a little bit flexible. My staff tells me I don't have anything at lunch. So I could come back.
The veterans, was there a temporary time?
9:30.
Okay. Well, you know, I'd like to march through. I mean, but I want the committee to all be here too. So let's do this. Everybody stretch your legs. Committee members that had something or they need a break, but let's be back in 5 minutes. We're going to start in 5 minutes. So you run.
Visiting.
Run. Could you pull that door shut for me, please? Just pull it. People can come in and I don't mind that, but we need to cut down some of the traffic noise. I guess here's what, let's try this format, see if it works. I think what I'll do is go through each of the items that appear to be changes in the new governor's recs, frame them and talk a little bit about what I think you're going to see with respect to the issues. So I'll try to frame the issues and then open it up to folks for questions. And then I'll ask my questions at the end. But and then I think, Governor, we'll go to 9:30. We'll shut down at 9:30 promptly, no matter where we are. We'll ask you to come back. If we go till noon, maybe give everybody a half an hour to grab something to eat, we'll meet back at 12:30 and then go till 2 if that works into your schedule.
We'll break at 9:30, Mr. Chairman, and then I will come back at 12:30.
We'll just send you, the whole staff, with you at 9:30. At 9:30, then, what we'll do is bring our staff in to go over the Craig. How's that? So that'll work. So we'll get the Craig report at 9:30 after you've left, and you just bring everybody back. So I'd like you to be here for the entire staff presentation or the budget, and then we'll make sure we'll get through. And we'll try to get through you by 2, and I think we'll get through everything by then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Here is the first issue that is a difference, as I understand it. In Governor Friedenthal's budget, he recommended a total salary adjustments for $19.4 million, and there were a variety of components in there, including bonus pay. There was salary adjustments to get it to 90% of market, based upon the Hay study that we've been working with A&I. And then they took the adjustments that they were going to provide for state employees, and they extrapolated what the same percentage would be for University of Wyoming community colleges. And the governor's recommended is to reduce the amount available for state employees, so you're not hitting the 90% target. I think you're hitting something below that. You've got a 3.1 bonus component in there, and recommending the elimination of the additional funding for salary adjustments for both the university and the community colleges. I think that's the issue.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe I misspoke, Governor Friedenthal's recommendation was to 94%. My recommendation is to 90%, and I gave you the anticipated number of employees that we anticipate that would apply to, and I'm looking for
this number, since it's for the second year of the biennium, would actually be biennialized, except for the 3.1, depending on what we choose to do in the future, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, while people are framing their question, I did want to have one area of further detail. I'll ask Shelley to explain if that would be permissible.
Absolutely. Tell you what, before we do that, folks here, and if you'd ask, why don't you introduce everybody? You've introduced Shelley, but you've got other staff folks here, and maybe tell, so if they'd all stand one at a time, not all the but one at a time when you're introduced, so that we can figure out who's who.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm pleased to introduce Tony Young. Tony is my deputy chief of staff, came over from the U.S. Attorney's Office. Chris Boswell, who we tried to give him a title during these 2 months, I've asked him for so many areas of help that it's hard to do it. He's going to help us, as you know, through this session, and then I'm asking that he be appointed as the head of A&I. Kerry Gray is my chief of staff. Jeremiah Is it going to be helping with policy and also help us through the transition? And I believe that is everyone.
All right. Any questions on the everybody understand the issue with respect to the state employees? I've got a couple things I want to follow up then if there are no other questions. I think I understand the issue with respect to UW and community colleges. In fact, I expressed views last time that it was not appropriate to extrapolate salary increases for state employees over. Concerns that I have that I'd like to make sure that we have addressed through the budget process is the first issue, do you remain committed to the what we were calling the Hay study and the market study, the work that we do? Have you had an opportunity to get up to speed with what work that A&I was doing, and is that the direction you think we ought to continue on?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have tried to get up to speed on the Hay study, and I will tell you that in going through that, my sense is it is not the perfect system. It has caused problems from compression and other problems. But the alternative to the Hay study or a similar type of study is, of course, that it becomes more piecemeal and I think less fair and less, I think, less predictable for the legislature and more difficult for the agencies to manage. So we are with the Hay study. I think in order for it to continue to be relevant, we obviously have to continue to update that. My other concern about the Hay study, frankly, and I'm not sure how to address that, is it seems a bit of a one-way street in some cases. And what I mean by that is that we look at the market and see what's going on in the private sector, and in good times it will show, you know, hey, we need a 2-5% increase, whatever it is. But we don't come back and say, you know, we're going to use that necessarily to cut everybody 10% when the market goes the other way. So I'm not sure what the plan is to deal with that type of situation. Those are some of my concerns. But I do think it is valid, the concept of having an analysis to determine where our state employees are versus the private sector, and a plan to make us competitive, understanding that these are public employees. And so also for the benefit of the employees, so that they know that this is not something just random that we do on a case-by-case basis. There is a plan in place. Some may like the plan, some may not like the plan, but I think it's a good faith attempt to try to be fair to all those concerned while watching the bottom dollar.
When we look at the allocations, the 6.1 was, I think, proposed for really market adjustments based upon A&I's work with respect to salary adjustments. So the as we decide how to appropriate, one way is just to give you the executive branch the money. The other is to specify that these are our objectives. And now, as a practical matter, if we approve the appropriation as it sits today based upon the governor's recs, the original governor's recs, then the 6.1 would have to be used as described in the narrative in the governor's rec. So it's important that between now and the time that A&I comes to testify that you look at the narrative that was provided by Governor Friedenthal and make sure that you agree with that, because if we, for example, if it says we're going to use $6.1 million to implement the Hay study, it's our expectation that's what it used. If you say, you know, I want to tweak it a little bit, then you've violated really the terms of the appropriation, because we expect that the narratives that form the basis for the request are the guideposts within which you have to use the money. So if you said, well, I'd rather use 2% for cost of living increases, that would not be authorized under our reading of the budget. So between now and we are in a – I know that you've got an expectation that that you have designated your A&I director, but we're a little bit in this median where you have an acting director. The real advocate for this had been Director Mike McVeigh. he's now gone. So I guess between the time when A&I comes up, you may have to decide whether you're going to send your act, your designee up or whatever, so we can get a commitment on what the 6.1 is going to be used. So that'll be important. With respect to the 3.1, I'm not sure that we have a clear enough guidance within the budget request to know what we're giving the money for. To simply say to the governor's office, here's $3.1 million, go out and implement a bonus system that we've not seen, and just by assurances the directors will then come in and provide a great system, that's a little vague. So I think the what we'll be looking for between now and the time that A&I presents the budget is, what are the guideposts within which the 3.1 will be used, and how do we define that in the short time we have available?
Thank you for those comments, Mr. Chairman. I will ask Mr. Boswell during this time period to make sure that the narrative in there is exactly what we want, so that we don't run afoul or in violation of what the intended use of the money is if you do decide to appropriate that money. And with respect to the performance, likewise, we will get you strong language that you can say yay or nay to.
And, you know, part of, and I'll just say this with respect to the committee, you know, when we pass these budgets, it's our expectation the budgets will be adhered to, and the language that forms the basis for the request are important to us. If money is not intended that money would be put in the budget for a purpose and then shifted by an agency. And so particularly as we have new directors coming on, new governors, new elected officials that have budgets, if they don't want to spend in accordance with the biennial budget, they need to be coming and ask us for a supplemental budget and a budget request. And it's not a matter of saying, geez, I like the fact that you gave us $10 million. In fact, I'm only going to use $5 million for what the original budget request is, but I'm going to move $5 million to another area. And that's not appropriate. So with respect to everybody, including the governor's office, if you find things in the budget that you don't agree with, that you want to shift the budget request, then where our expectation is that the agencies will come back and ask for a supplemental change for that issue. A couple areas that I would like just to comment on, that when we with respect to particularly the directors and appointments that have large salaries attached to their positions, I would ask, Governor, that you be sure to engage, and your staff to be sure and engage A&I in setting salaries. And and I've already talked to the governor about this, but one of the areas is when the former director of the Department of Health had a salary level that when we first engaged or authorized that salary was because the position was that of a physician. And the physician was getting paid comparable salaries to other physicians in state government. And we employ a variety of physicians, including psychiatrists, for example, at the Department of Health and at the state hospital. So that when Dr. Sherrard's salary was set, it was set because he was not because of, partly because he was a director, but partly because he was a physician. And what's happened, I think, is that it is assumed that, well, if that's his salary, the next director gets that. That may or may not be an issue. I just want to make sure that the governor's office is going through the process of conferring with A&I to make sure, why was the salary set? What is the salary band? Are you in a normal salary band, or what we're calling the X band, which is a deviation from the salary bands? And then so that when we make an inquiry as to why the salary was arrived at, was it a special? And we have done that. The CIO, for example, is an X-banded salary. He's paid more than other folks. And if that's the basis for the salary, that's fine. If the basis is this is what the market required, but here we now have a new director that is paid more than prior directors, and new employees will have an expectation based upon what you're paying directors. And So with that respect, the comments made, and just make sure that if you would, Governor, make sure your staff is conferring with A&I on salary levels, and that we're just, that you know whether this is an expanded employee, whether it's an appropriate salary, or why that salary is arrived at.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments, Mr. Chairman, and you know this is part of my. This was a mistake on my part because I looked at what Dr. Sherrard was making, and I hired somebody who offered an amount that I thought was necessary compared to what he was making now. It was considerably less. It is considerably less than what Dr. Sherrard was making, understanding Dr. Sherrard is a doctor and understanding Dr. Sherrard had other duties. And so it didn't occur to me at the time, but as you have kindly repeated here and otherwise, we will take care to do that in the future.
With respect to the issue of the 6.1 now, by eliminating the UW and the community colleges, that still leaves at issue as to whether or not a portion of that is to be used for judiciary employees. Let's take the judges out. Do we know right now whether the 6.1 included non-judges salaries, and whether A&I calculated that using the judiciary? And do we know the answer to that? All right, let's not try to answer it. Chris, if you would, or Governor, if you would have your, the issue is here, there's two aspects of the judiciary. If we're going to give salary adjustments to state employees, generally those state employees that are a member of the judiciary who are not judges, we would want, in the past, treated them alike. Now, the legislative branch we treat differently, and we treat that in our feed bill. It'll be our obligation to talk to leadership to make sure that if we're using Hay Group numbers, we're giving state employees raises, are we giving comparable raises to the legislative staff? But the issue with respect to judiciary, they kind of, if you're going to do market adjustments for them, we want to make sure that we're attending to that issue, and whether the 6.1 is to be allocated among the judiciary is a question that we need to answer, whether we don't want to address the judiciary or whether we make an allocation of that. The second component that we need to look into is that if we're giving raises to directors, that then brings in what about the judges themselves, and should the judges get a salary increase? If we're, if we went out and did a market study, we'd have an analysis. And I don't know what to do with that, but we just have to recognize that every time we give salary increases, there's a ripple effect, and that ripple effect includes making sure we treat the judiciary and the judges equally and fairly as we're doing the executive branch. I think those are all my comments on that we need to address. And part of what I'm trying to do is make sure everybody in the markup stage has been thinking of these. Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Governor, I was kind of heartened when you said, made the comment about the Hay study not being a two-way street. And I think what we're thinking here is that the private sector at this point in time, rather than increasing wages, is perhaps even decreasing wages. And here we are in government at this point in time because of something that's happened in the past and something that's been set in motion, which is the Hay study and a long-term goal of getting people to market. That we're going to increase government wages at a time when the private sector is actually decreasing wages or holding wages constant. And because the Hay study really isn't a two-way street, because it doesn't take into account economic times like this, I actually ask myself the question that maybe at this point in time we should pull over to the side of the road and let the private sector catch up with the government sector wages, because I feel that we're probably giving increases as far as market-based increases at a point in time when the private sector is looking at us and saying why. And I think we could pull over to the side of the road for a year for 2 years until the economy sorts itself out and we actually have the perhaps the assumptions that we made a couple of years ago in the Hayes study were actually accurate and not a disconnection from the reality that we see ourselves in today.
You know, Senator Meyer, I'm not sure that I agree or disagree with you. As having participated in the Hayes study, I think that the idea was to do ongoing research data. But let's take, for example, the oil patch. You may have, if you're competing for engineers at DEQ that in the oil patch or the companies are recruiting your engineers out, it is true that during a boom and bust cycles, you may have your salaries have to fluctuate. Or the Hayes study would change, but I think there's updated information. But I'll tell you where I'm at right now, I think from the committee we ought to be concerned about whether or not if the 6.1 is based upon that market adjustment study that was being really put together and spearheaded by Director McVeigh, if there's somebody that's picking up that charge. I was comfortable, I think maybe other members are comfortable, knowing there's somebody that's fully committed to that process. And if that's the case, it's easier to sink your teeth in and use that as the basis for giving the 6.1. But if we're going to, as you point out, pull over and say, look, let's make sure we've gone the right direction, that would have a different result. And I'm not sure we're going to answer that today, but we certainly need to find out how we're going to have A&I present that budget. And you've got, as I understand, if the notion is we're going to use Chris Boswell in one capacity and then a capacity later, we might have to bridge that gap somehow.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, a couple things. We are... I'm trying to use Mr. Boswell in any way we can now, both to get us through the session and then, of course, in the capacity of A&I. Senator Meyer, to your comment, you know, as I look at coming in as the new governor, I do so with respect to what the legislature has done in the past in terms of decisions made. My understanding of the history on the Hayes study, a lot of debate went into that. A lot of planning, pros and cons. And so that is one thing I looked at and said, you know, we either decide we're on or we're off. And my belief is that for the reasons that I said and for you said, you know, how does it work the other way? But the recommendation that I have to move up to 90%, I thought about in these terms. One is that rather than pulling completely over the side of the road, what we're doing is we're still not taking it up to market. We're taking it up to 90% of the market, and I thought that was a reasonable compromise versus the 94-95% recommended by Governor Friedenthal. So that was my thinking on that. Mr. Chairman, if you're asking whether or not we continue to move forward with the Hayes study, as I understand it, as of January 2010, was that the last time?
That was the update.
January 2010 was the update, and they are prepared to do a full survey this year in terms of those numbers, Senator Meyer. So if the question is, do I plan to continue to use that process, to use that approach, we can debate whether it's 90% or 89% or no percent, but I think that the process itself that was set out by the legislature and that Mr. McVeigh worked on is a process that we should continue understanding it is not something that we treat as a sacred document. We got to continue to go back and look and make sure we are where we want to be.
Mr. Chairman, just and I. Mr. Chairman, Governor, appreciate your comments on that. And I think part of the work we put into this deal, and I just listened to the conversation, a lot of it's anecdotal, and it's so it's really important, I think. We've got a lot of faith in this, and I just reaffirm what good Senator Nicholas is, who is going to be that point person that we're going to build that faith with, that it's going to come to us and give us the numbers on this process, on the Hayes study. So appreciate your comments and support of it. I think without that, it's a lot of conjecture and a lot of anecdotal stuff. So appreciate it.
Well, Representative, again, I will refer back, you know, that I think everyone, whether they agree or disagree with the numbers, they feel more comfortable, at least this is how we're going about it, rather than on anecdotal evidence or because of likes or dislikes of this person or that person. And so I think that, as I said, the concept of having a process that we can look at and say, this is why we're doing what we're doing, maybe agree or disagree, but it is a more objective process, I think, is beneficial. The point person on it, A&I, of course, as I've said, I'm asking that Mr. Boswell be given permission to take over that, John.
Okay, if everybody answered their questions on that topic, we're going to shift topics. The next topic is school capital construction.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to interrupt. I wanted to make sure there was a clarification right before the break that I would like Shelley to address, so I don't...
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, late in the process, we identified 30 employees who are funded with school foundation program funding in their salaries, who are also due a market increase, and that amount, an annual amount for that is $72,000, and we will include that in for clarity in the narrative that you discussed this morning to ensure that we have all of that in there as well, because those funds are appropriated and but had not been included in the original request.
There's two ways that we can do this. One is, I mean, are you talking about a need for another $72,000, a school foundation program account to implement the plan?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, yes.
Okay, now that would require a governor's letter to the extent that it's not in, just so we clarify. But before you jump to do that, what I think you'll do is work with your budget staff and make sure that you cover all the topics, because so instead of getting two or three more letters, and sometimes we've simply gone to have the budget staff prepare a new sheet for that page. But you'll be talking to Richard and making sure that we get that. But we understand, so you've got the school foundation program component. There may even be a federal fund component that may not be addressed or may be, require adjustment, and there are different ways to do that, but just certainly confer with them on how to present it, whether through a governor's letter or whether just through a new spreadsheet, so our staff knows how to incorporate the recommendation and we know what the fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, we will be sure to incorporate that.
Much. And then I would ask you to confer with your budget office about the judiciary, how it was an allocation, and then they can, of course, contact the budget folks at the judiciary to see what would be fair if we're going to go that route. All right. Changing the topics to school construction, let me frame the issue just for a moment. First of all, remember, the School Facilities Commission recommendation comes through our select committee. And the select committee recommended a dollar amount, and furthermore, we have more money available in the school foundation program account than we originally addressed. We have to be very careful about tying one issue to another, and to avoid the notion that you're log rolling or whatever, you're going to say, well, I'll do this condition on you voting for another bill. But with respect to the issue about whether or not our construction delivery systems that we're authorized to use for schools, whether it be a design build, whether it be a design bid build, or a construction manager at risk, let me tell you this. The issues are different for School Facilities Commission, which are using design, bid, build programs, than for the university, which is allowed to use construction managers at risk, and for the state A&I, who is doing construction managers at risk. On Friday before the session, Chris Boswell, myself, and Representative Illaway met with about 50 contractors upstairs. They had an attorney who put together the issues. I'll get that out to you so you can see what the issues are. But the issues for school construction are much different than the issues for UW and for A&I. And many of the issues that I think, Governor, that you're talking about are more addressed towards A&I and UW contracting and have less to do where you have the traditional design bid, and then because presumably your bids are open and people just administer the bids. We don't have time to get all into those issues. We will find time for the committee to be apprised of it, and I think what we need to do is have Acting Director Cathcart or whatever we're going to call him talk to us about that issue about design methods and work. And when the university comes in, we're going to ask the university to address their issues, and we need to talk to make sure that Jim Rose is talking about community college issues as they apply to Casper, some of the issues that you had up in Casper on the Gateway project, that sort of thing. Having said that, there are a couple things that we can do. We could say this appropriation is conditioned upon the passage of an act. We've done that in the past. Say, so if there's Senate file or House Bill X, that the appropriation can only be expended in the event that that bill passes. That's not uncommon to do. Another thing we could do is if we thought that the construction delivery methods require more fine-tuning and require interim work, we could say, well, here in the budget are some conditions to the expenditure of all capital construction dollars to make sure we have a more fair system, or a system that's more fair to our contractors. So in the recommendations that we were receiving from the contractors in Cheyenne on Friday, we're trying to distill through that. I'll give you the whole list, and perhaps we can distill three or four things that we could put into the budget to say, "Work. Our expectation is that agencies will do these things." And it may be that our statutes are great, but our agencies aren't enforcing the statutes in the way that they're needed to. So we need to. Those are the two choices. I mean, I guess there's three choices. One is you don't spend the money. Recognizing, by the way, that school facilities, the obligation to build schools is an independent obligation that we have to address schools that should not be tied to whether or not our contractors are happy or not. Our obligation to educate, you can't say, well, we're not going to send teachers out the classroom unless some other sector is happy. Our obligation to educate and to build is independent of these things, and I certainly want to keep those features independent. But having said that, if we're spending CapCon dollars, we could say, one, we're not going to spend it. Two, it's conditioned upon passage of another bill or a file that we're looking at. And three, we can in the budget say, as a condition to spending these dollars, these are the things that we would like you to do. So with that in mind, questions on school CapCon?
No, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that I agree with you and that we'd like to move forward in that direction to get more information. Thank you.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question there would be that we've tied legislation to funding if such and such passes, but it's generally something like if the bill passes to allow the purchase of cars, here's the $1 million to purchase cars. What this legislation, because I don't know which direction preference is going, it's more like policy. And so I think if we tie this to something, if such and such passes, we're endorsing a piece of legislation or hanging a carrot out there to encourage people, I guess, to vote for a certain direction. But I don't even know which directions may be presented.
Well, I would caution, and Senator Hastert's worked on some legislation last year, but the issue is not simply preferences, I don't think, is the issue. The issue is how are the biggest abuses that we're apparently seeing are the construction manager at risk with the University of Wyoming and A&I, and allowing out-of-state large contractors who are the CMRs, construction managers at risk, to come in and shop bids to take local contractors, lower their appropriations, or not their appropriations, but their contracts, forcing them to do things that traditionally they couldn't do in a design or in the traditional design bid delivery system. So we've got new delivery systems that were introduced, and it looks to me like we're not following the rules right. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just and this is something that I have worked with Senator Bebout and the Minerals Committee extensively through the interim. And some of the issues that we have is that the main function or the main purpose of the legislation that we have right now is a fairness and loophole system that has granted out-of-state contractors an unfair advantage over in-state contractors. And that's primarily what the attempt is trying to do here with the preference legislation, that is to just make it a level playing field, so to speak, that everybody has the same fair chances or shots at getting the bids on these works, you know, because of the fact that primarily we have been building and rebuilding the infrastructure of our school systems with out-of-state contractors, and you know, and it was found that, you know, there were several loopholes that we are trying to, that this legislation is addressing. And then the other fact that, Mr. Chairman, I think you alluded to is that there is, in some respects, the agency does have the ability but doesn't have the manpower to enforce some of the laws that we have today. And that's a whole other topic about getting an additional purpose, additional personnel into that particular agency to enforce some of the laws that we have today. So those are the two different issues that we've had.
Governor, I'm going to ask, you know, I apologize, ask your indulgence as we go through the day, because the if we had the if we started the hearings a month ago, we could come down and talk to you. We could sort these things through. But we're going to be marking this budget up in 2 weeks. Typically, we would try to refrain our comments to you just to ask questions and not have discussion. But because we're going to be voting on these things in 2 weeks, and because you're new, I kind of think that we're going to break in a little bit and allow some discussion. But as we go around, the object, from my objective, is trying to figure out what the level of understanding of the committee is, and making sure that between now and the time you mark up, you have enough information to vote on these issues. So what I think with respect to the construction issues, we have A&I coming in. We're going to want Rich Cathcart to take us through this. We'll get the information that we had. Senator Hastert, to the extent that you have issues that you think that are appropriate to be addressed, I want to be sure that you talk to Senator, or to former Senator Cathcart, make sure he's aware of your concerns so that when he's here, he talks about those issues and we get testimony. With respect to UW, I've already asked the president of the university to do a couple things. I've asked him to, one, investigate the complaints on the Wildcatter Suites with respect to the color or the business college, some things that happened. One of the accusations is these contractors are bidding low numbers and then coming in and providing substandard equipment, HVAC equipment, things like that. So I've asked both A&I to have the construction folks go out with the maintenance folks on buildings that are just turned over. The joint labs be an example. And any brand new buildings, have the construction management people meet with the people that are now maintaining the equipment and have them comment, and the discussion is, did we get good equipment? Or are we going to see a huge increase in maintenance obligations over the course of the next year or two because the way they made their profit is to provide a substandard equipment. With respect to University of Wyoming, I asked them to have their maintenance people meet with their construction management people. I've already heard indications from maintenance people that are in Laramie that they were going to the College of Business and they're seeing equipment that they think is substandard, difficult to operate, and that's where they shave their cost. And some of the shaving is not with Wyoming contractors, rather it was with out-of-state contractors just trying to make a profit. So these are important issues that we need to get a handle on. They affect our budgets going forward. Appropriations Committee needs to understand them. And, Governor, I would ask that you make sure that your staff are prepared. Now, Governor, we've got about five topics to hit. It's taken about 20 minutes a topic. I would ask you that maybe, and I think it's important that we get through with you on these issues so that if we get through from 12:30 to 2, great, but maybe if we don't make it, can we bring you after adjournment back up around 3 or 4?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, as you know, we appreciate you delaying this. You could have done this hearing earlier, the day after I was elected, which would have been not fruitful. We've come a long way since then, but we appreciate that. So I will make myself available as needed.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, we want to develop our relationship with you, and these topics I think are important that you hear from us, that we hear from you. So we're going to release you now and ask you to come back at 12:30 with your staff, and then with the mind that if we still don't finish, it may push us back on Department of Health, but this is just as important. Oh, I didn't realize, Rich, you were over there. We could have just talked to your face.
But not enough.
Yeah, well, I guess you don't have to tell Rich what we want. All right, let's, Governor, thank you. We'll go, the JAC will stay because we're going to go over the Craig reports and the new income profiles.
Thank you.
there's with respect to the Department of Health, we'll start them when we're done with the governor. We'll finish the governor's office. We'll get through the list. But my view of it is that even if there's only 20 minutes for between, you know, we may go as late as 6, but even if there's only 20 minutes, we'll go on to the Department of Health because we got to get people started. We got to move through. And what you're going to, it'll be herky-jerky like this as we go through, and that's fine. But, you know, you don't get these opportunities to learn about what the governor is and make sure that he understands what our issues are. We have new members, and I want to make sure that when we go to mark up, everybody on the committee is fluent on the issues so you can discuss them. And I don't assume that anybody can converse in them without going through these. And I mean, if you find that it's mundane and you want to go faster and you could skip these things, fine. But you know, I enjoy learning about what the governor is thinking. I want to just make sure you guys, particularly new members, can so we can have a debate on the same level when we hit it. Okay, so Bill, it's your floor.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and keep this briefer than the discussion we had the other day about it, because it is a pretty simple report, actually.
Sure, we only had about a half a committee or so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mr. Chairman, this Craig report, it will be passed out on the floors today, and it's actually, you know, the governor referred to it in his speech, and it was actually released online yesterday, but we had a little little bit of miscommunication, so it's not like there were secret numbers floating around or anything. It's just a matter of getting it passed out. Just a couple of bottom lines, I guess, and I'm going to kind of refer to both documents at the same time here. Probably the easiest way to explain the net effects on the general fund and budget reserve account is to refer you to the Goldenrod page 1. And if you come up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 numbers from the bottom, the fifth number up, that 290, 604, 718, that's the expected amount that will transfer to the budget reserve account on June 30, 2012. Or not budget reserve account, pardon me, the LSRA. So that's the automatic transfer language that's currently in the budget bill. And to get an idea of what happened in January, look at the number directly to the left, and that's the difference. It's $22.7 million higher than back in October, and the net effect, that's the net effect of 11-12 changes, fiscal year 11 and 12 changes to the general fund and budget reserve account. And it boils down to basically two categories. We did not change any assumptions for the mineral projections. All we did was add some money into sales and use tax estimates, and that's based on current actuals as well as projected oil and gas employment numbers. One thing I'd like to point out, I guess, with regard to that sales and use tax, that the people who weren't here on Tuesday wouldn't probably otherwise get the benefit of, because we did not write it up in a lot of detail in this report. But a lot of the discussion that took place at this last Craig meeting centered on activity in Laramie County currently, of which there's a ton. There's a lot of additional payroll in this county right now. Hotels are booked up, and basically it wasn't really jiving with the rig count that we've been seeing in this county. And so Tom Dahl, the oil and gas commissioner, conservation commissioner, checked into it a little bit and found out that the seismic work that's being done here and about to be done in Goshen County has contributed a ton of employment and people staying in hotels. In Laramie County, they figure about two-thirds of them are staying in hotels and about a third of them are commuting up from Fort Collins. So that sort of explains that additional economic activity in Laramie County that doesn't quite jive with the rig count yet. Again, we talked about this with the chairman and the governor on Tuesday, but out of 110 permits that have been granted by the Oil and Gas Commission in Laramie County, there have only been 10 completed wells. So it's a pretty slow process at this point. And this oil and gas play here is a lot different than it's been in other parts of the state. It's a lot different nature of drilling and so forth. I'm sure most of you have been paying attention to that. Bottom line is we added $17.4 million to sales and use taxes between 11 and 12, and we added $5.3 million from the general fund portion of those lease sales that took place at state lands in November. So that's actual revenue that we know is in the bank, and the net is 22.7 to general fund and budget reserve. And unless there are any questions on any of that, we can move on.
A quick question, Mr. Chairman. Just on commodity, natural gas prices have creeped up a little bit. I mean, they're over four now. I haven't checked lately, but any comments on that?
Yeah, actually, Mr. Chairman, I'm glad you brought it up, because oil and gas, both, but primarily natural gas prices were definitely a topic of the meeting. And like we told you back in October, you know, the long-term futures on gas prices has been holding right around that 450 range. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, if you remember, we set gas prices at 390 based on some various factors that affect Wyoming prices. That really hasn't changed. Those futures prices are still about the same, and Wyoming's prices, you know, it's really been an unusual year, I'll put it that way. Storage was really high through the summer, yet our gas price held. We've had quite a bit of cold weather already, and the gas price is still holding. So it's not really in that $5, $6, $7, $8 range.
Mr. Chairman, is the storage coming down though with this cold weather?
Mr. Chairman, storage has come down a little bit, but it's still right at the top of the 5-year average. And the other thing I'd caution about that 5-year average, when you look at those storage numbers, the 5 years is getting adjusted now for these higher and higher and higher storage levels. So it's the average is starting to go up. You know, you see that seasonality, the whole trend is going up. It's a pretty strange situation, but price-wise, we decided to leave it the same. I think there's a fair amount of risk out there.
Mr. Chairman, just one more on coal. You know, before I came this morning watching, of course, the unbelievable flooding in Australia and how is that affecting world prices and coal. And a lot of our stuff's long-term contracts, but
well, Mr. Chairman, that coal is a kind of an interesting mineral too, in that it's mostly domestic. The whole thing is kind of a domestic market, but it's funny that you bring it up, because there are plans underway to start shipping coal to China, which boggles my mind. But yeah, I mean, eventually those kinds of things could factor into it. I think right now we would discount that.
You haven't seen any. Okay, thank you.
I just make sure I understand and caution people when they see these gas prices, because historically what we would, in order to get an average price of, say, 390, it was an expectation that you would have higher winter volumes and those prices would be, say, in the $5 range. And then you'd have lower volumes in the summer with down in, say, $2. And I think what we're seeing is, while historically your averages were blended out at, say, 390, our winter pricing isn't going as high as we traditionally see, but the summer pricing is held, so that holds your average. But if you're seeing winter prices at 450 or 5 bucks, that doesn't mean that you're going to see since that's over and above the Craig estimate, that doesn't mean you're going to see that in your profile, because that was already built in. Do I understand
that
right?
Mr. Chairman, in my opinion, that's exactly correct. And that's why I say I think there's some risk that hangs out there yet. It would be very interesting to talk to a sampling of market analysts on Wyoming, specifically Wyoming's gas prices, because until You know, and admittedly, you know, we have the REX pipeline mitigating things and additional takeaway capacity. But, you know, the fact of the matter is those pipelines last couple summers, they've been used for storage. And I think that's the only thing that's allowed some of this production to continue. The market looks really nice and stable when you look at it from way up above and you see that 390 average holding. But it just seems to me like there's things have changed dramatically in the last few years.
Started already.
Oh, the flag. Oh.
I wasn't going to let you talk anyway.
Go ahead. Bill, on switching over to oil, what I've heard anecdotally is that if the Niobrara play does come on, we're going to have problems with a larger differential in our oil price and that we're going to have some of the same problems that we had in natural gas as far as takeaway capacity or refinery capacity is going to be a problem. I'm wondering what discussions you guys might have made and what kind of data that we could actually hang our hat on or try to generate is out there so we can, I guess, make some steps in the oil takeaway capacity as we did in the gas capacity to try to stay ahead of it if it does come to fruition.
Mr. Chairman, the issue, I'm glad you brought it up, actually, Senator Meyer, because the Niobrara play actually is something that we talked quite a bit about. And I think all your points are really valid with regard to that. The big problem is there isn't any data. Other than we have a couple of rigs operating, anecdotally, again, you know, there was the one big well just south of the border, and a lot of drilling occurred around that then. So, I mean, it turned out to be a ton of activity for Colorado. They have yet to hit a well like that in southeast Wyoming. And so until, you know, more wells have been drilled, I it's all just a guess at this point. That's the first thing. And, you know, what was discussed at the Craig meeting did have to do with this kind of rush to lease lands and rush to get mineral rights, to acquire mineral rights from people, from landowners. And as we discussed with the co-chairs, this play is a lot different for a lot of reasons, but there are a couple that really make it stand out. One is the fractured land ownership versus, you know, a Jonah Field situation where you're dealing with basically leasing that and permitting it from the federal government on BLM lands, a little bit of interspersed deeded lands. Here it's mostly deeded land. There's a little bit of state land as evidenced by those leases. And the corresponding incomes, very little federal land involved. So now you have this kind of fractured ownership situation that you have to straighten out first. Second, it's really deep stuff that requires really big rigs that can pull a lot of pipe because they're going down and then they're drilling horizontal. So you're talking several thousand feet, 10,000 feet of pipe total or 15,000 feet of pipe that they're having to pull. So it takes rigs like what they have up in the Bakken Shale up in North Dakota, and, you know, it's expensive to move that stuff. It's expensive to set it up. That's why they think there's so much of this seismic activity going on, is that the well in northern Colorado was a really well-researched well because that was an old historic oil-producing area down there. Well, there had been a lot of research done, and EOG, I believe, is the one that drilled that well. They did a ton of research before they drilled the big one, and when it came in, you know, they benefited from that by being able to drill all around it. Here, you know, I've heard numbers like $2 million a day to run these rigs, the kind of rig that they're going to have to employ here. In addition, they don't have. But they don't expect that they're going to have the economies of scale that they have like over in western Wyoming, where they have multiple processes going on at one time. They're drilling, they're completing, they're taking away capacity. They've got, you know, 100 people around those rigs doing all different things, and they're not going to be able to do that here. And the last point is exactly what you're saying, and that's the takeaway capacity. There isn't really any pipeline infrastructure to get this oil out of here, so it's essentially going to have to all be trucked out for the time being until that's put into place. So we're really on the very front end of this thing right now, and there's no telling at this point what it may mean. We've heard estimates that no one will put their name with, but you know, if you figure a 30% increase in the total amount of oil that we produce right now, which, by the way, about 40% of that total oil production is actually condensate off of gas wells. But if you figure a 30%, roughly 30% increase in total oil production once this thing's totally up and running, you know, as pointed out to the co-chairs and to the governor, it still really pales in comparison to the effects of, say, a dollar in the price of natural gas. Or, you know, it just...
Put it in perspective, if you on your green sheets, if you take a look at Table 6 and look at the revenues that we're receiving on severance taxes, and you have, the point that was made, by the way, is that for other plays, you're getting your federal mineral royalties because they're on mineral lands, and you're getting severance taxes. Most of this is private land, so you're not going to see the FMR on this Niobrara play. But on crude oil, if you're sitting there on that list of 2011, your projected revenues are $160 million. Even if you increased, 10% statewide, our severance taxes are $16 million. So when you start thinking about what the impacts are, what revenues we're going to see, seems to me 10% increase on your entire state production is pretty ambitious. And so this whole play to even see $16 million into the state coffers over this is a yearly thing, but we're a long ways from seeing much tax revenue. That's not, jobs may be different.
Mr. Chairman, again, I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, in this part of the state, we hear an awful lot of excitement, you know, at the county level, city level, whatever, because of the potential impacts in the counties as far as how much additional revenue. And Senator Meyer, to your county, I'm sure that impact could be enormous, you know, just from the assessed valuation, because you're starting out pretty small. But in the, you know, you're comparing to something that's already pretty limited. But when you maybe a poor choice of words, Mr. Chairman, but in the scheme of things, in a statewide revenue perspective, if you're looking to, you know, throw $52 million a biennium into local governments, I'm not sure this oil play is your source for that.
Mr. Chairman, maybe that would be best for later, but just real quick, just for my edification, that on general fund budget reserve balance, page 2 or 3 on the golden rod, $93,025,000. That none of these numbers are reflective of the of Governor Meade's adjustments. Is that correct?
And this only profiles the Craig status and not the the governor's Rex, right?
Okay.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And the other thing to keep in mind is this: all of these numbers in the following pages reflect June 30, 2012. So it doesn't really reflect what the governor is, you know, the general fund and budget reserve account monies that are available for him to budget, you know, to suggest a budget on and for you guys to budget on, because that's a flow at the end of 2012. That's why I referred you to that number on the front page, because that's pre-flow.